This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Broadcasting from the WEEI studios, powered by Verizon. 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston. An Odyssey Sports Station.
This hour of Afternoons is brought to you by East Coast Metal Roofing. Pay no interest and make no payments for an entire year during their Beat the Heat savings event.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons back at Fenway Park in our Ford Clubhouse Fenway studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and the Ford Summer Sales event. Hurry in to get great deals now, including on F-Series, official truck of the Red Sox. It's 3 o'clock. No Ted Johnson today, no Fitzy, but no problem. Still time for the three-point stance with Dan Ball, Andy Hart, and Brian Ferzocco or Stiz filling in.
319!
318!
318!
318, Chet Hunt! Yeah, there you go!
What's that, Chet
Hunt? It's the three-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three! Bam!
Easy as one, two, three.
Boston up! A hat trick and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone. A three-run homer and the game is tied.
On WEEI Afternoons.
It may be time to update that. I feel like you deserve a Jaylen Brown three.
Yes.
I know there's another one that you wanted me to fix. I can't remember which one.
Yeah, let's update that.
Okay.
A better count.
Perfect. Okay, there we go. I needed more stuff to do anyways. Time for today's three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, or Jared Karabas wants to fight you at Fenway, you got to get Glassman. Call all sevens at 617-777-7777. 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons. Three individuals giving their biggest stories on the world of sports today. Our order for today's three-point stance is Andy Hart and myself, Dan Baldwin, my man Stiz, jumping in. Andy, you will lead us off. You get 60 seconds for your opening stance. Are you ready?
Damn right.
All right, your 60 seconds begin right now.
Okay, so over the weekend, word broke that Steve Pagliuca was looking to buy the Connecticut Sun, the team that played very recently at the Garden. Obviously, we know Pags tried to get the Celtics, was sort of strong-armed out of that, but he still wants to have a team to play in the building. So he's willing to pay $325 million for the Sun and move them to Boston out of Uncasville, I guess it is down there. And yet there seems to be this weird, gotta wait to see if the WNBA will allow it and approve it. What the hell are they waiting for? You're trying to screw up Caitlin Clark. Now the Boston Celtics essentially want to buy the Sun, move them to the greatest sports city on the planet, play at the Boston Garden, the TD Garden, deck it out, elevate the league, bring in money, and oh, by the way, pay $325 million to do it. Robert Kraft bought the Patriots for $172 million in the 90s, and that was an NFL franchise. And don't tell me it was the 90s. We knew the NFL was blowing up. WNBA, you should not only sign, seal, and deliver this, you should all like rent a van, drive the team up, and say thank you very much for the $325 million. Oh, by the way, the last team that sold in the WNBA, $10 million. It's now selling for $325 million. So how about we just sign off on this and get the league moving forward? Stop screw. What the hell are you doing?
That I don't know. I can't believe that there would be any kind of red tape in getting this done. And it makes so much sense for everybody. I mean, Boston's the only big metro I can think of that has an NBA team, but not a WNBA team to match. So it brings in a whole new group of fans. It certainly helps the Sun franchise. If you're connected to an NBA team from a financial standpoint, that's great. And if Pags and this new ownership group have any kind of designs on creating a new venue, which was something that did come out of the discussions after he bought the team, well, now you have two tenants and neither of which are paying rent. So it automatically gives more juice to, hey, maybe it is worth breaking ground on a new spot. So I see no issues, and especially for the league. I mean, a Boston, whatever. What did you, I can't remember what you called them, the Shamrock?
Shamrock. We already gave you your name, the Boston Shamrock.
Right.
Or Shamrocks. I don't know if that's one of those singular plurals, but whatever. We're close. We can already see the logo. It's a four-leaf clover.
Actually, yeah, there's a sneaky amount of singular Sun, Liberty. Yeah. Anyways, whatever you want to call them. Yeah, I love every bit of this.
And as I said, like the Caitlin Clark thing that we continue to wonder, is she kind of a dink? Does she bring it upon herself? What's her deal with other players? Is it hazing? Is it cattiness? I believe Stiz brought up.
Right.
Like, this is business. This isn't cattiness or personal or anything. This is business. They want to, as you mentioned, if you look in the standings, NBA, and cross-reference them with WNBA, the big ones are all represented.
Absolutely.
Right? Except Boston,
yeah,
which is arguably the greatest basketball city on the planet. The Celtics, the history, the legends, the banners, the whole thing.
There's an LA, a New York, a Chicago. All the legacy NBA franchises have one to match on the
deck. And now somebody has $325 million on the table.
Just laying around.
Which looks great for your league.
Absolutely.
Like, everybody mocks the WNBA. They've never made a profit. Would you rather go to a game or I give you $20 or whatever all those like Twitter things are?
It was a dollar.
Okay, a dollar. This legitimizes the WNBA as another step forward as they pick up on this momentum that is legitimate.
Right.
It's coming from Caitlin Clark and other sources, Angel Reese, different stars, whatever. I don't know why you would even hesitate to approve this, move this, make it happen.
No, and I'm the Connecticut guy on the show, so I love that they had a WNBA franchise. Connecticut's a huge basketball state, but when you're playing in Uncasville, connected to a casino in an arena that's, I don't know, maybe 10,000 seats, probably less. I'd probably put it
more like...
I saw
Disney on Ice there.
Yeah. Oh, did you really?
Yeah. Okay. Different thing, totally.
Slightly different product. But yeah, it limits the potential. It limits how much I can legitimize you if you're playing, again, out of a casino in front of whatever. If you're in Boston, in a major sports market, getting, you know, major promotions on a major network, whether they sign with NESN or NBC Sports Boston, a radio station, whatever else, it further adds to the potential of the franchise, which, to your point, further adds to the growth of the league.
Cross-promotion.
Yeah.
I mean, WNBA and the NBA are interwoven throughout history. I mean, they're basically subsidized by them. So the promotion you could have with Jason Tatum and the Celtics, like, the whole thing just makes... Jaylen Brown was there, right? Whatever that was, a week ago, a couple weeks ago, when the game took... it was more than that now, I guess. But Jaylen Brown was in attendance.
And
they were all talking up the idea. Sophie Cunningham or others were talking about, that's pretty cool that Jaylen Brown, Aaliyah Boston, they are talking about Jaylen Brown's in the crowd. So,
and to answer the question of, well, where do they play? I don't know that answer.
Court.
I don't think...
Big games at the Garden.
Yeah, there you go. When the Indiana Fever are in town, when maybe like UNESCO and the New York team are in town, you play them at the Garden. If not... As I think we brought up a couple of weeks ago, there are a million different places that you could play. Put them at Agganis. Put them up at UMass Lowell. There are plenty of different places within the greater Boston area where you can put a court down and have them play. And there'll be packed crowds. Even your smaller level games will still have great crowds, great atmosphere. And so I do not see a reason why people wouldn't like it.
All right, Danny Boy, you're up.
Okay, Stiz, may I have 60 seconds, please?
Your 60 seconds begins right now.
All right, so last week we kind of brought up the fact that Bryce Harper and MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred got into a bit of a spat when it came to a salary cap in Major League Baseball.
Mm.
It is of my opinion that I think Major League Baseball is looking in the wrong direction when they're trying to fix their finances in the league. Right now there are three teams that have over $200 million on their current active roster. It would be four if Aaron Judge wasn't hurt, but he is. So meanwhile, there are 15 teams that are under $100 million currently active on their payroll. It was at 11 before the deadline, and now it's 15. And out of those teams, only one is currently in the playoffs, and that's Milwaukee. Everybody else is multiple games behind in the wild card race. Baseball needs to be implementing not a salary cap, but a salary floor. These teams are getting the competitive balance revenue. They're getting money from the teams that are spending too much. It needs to be implemented back onto the roster to make the league better and have more teams that are trying to win.
I love the idea.
Okay.
I think the owners immediately say, well, if we get a floor, we get a ceiling. Like, that's how houses are built.
Yes.
Many, you know, what's that guy that says a room without a roof or whatever? That's not how rooms work. Rooms have a roof and a floor.
Right.
And I think that would be a non-starter. I think that's almost more of a non-starter than the cap is to the players. If you go to the owner and say, no, we're just putting in a floor.
Yeah.
You have to spend this much. And then everybody else can spend as much as they want. From the players, that's a boon. Because the rich owners... you know, the Red Sox, the Padres, Mets, Yankees, they'll still be spending a boatload of money. And now you just guaranteed that the Pirates and those teams are also spending more money.
Yeah.
So you just increase the value. So I get the mindset 100%.
Right.
100%. It's so infuriating. And you see this even in the NFL now, like these idea, how much does each team get right out the gates, handed to them from the league, from TV, from revenue sharing, whatever. And it's like, wait, they're not spending that. Why are they not spending that? But I think it would be a non-starter with the owners for negotiating.
The only way that maybe you could try to entice them is you'd have to try to give them a projection of here is the revenue that the league would build in if you had 30 teams that were actively at least trying to field a competitive roster. Because this, it's kind of an analogy for life, but there's the argument that, oh, the middle class of MLB player is disappearing. You either have a rookie on a cheap contract or you have the most highly right. paid players in the league, and there's really nobody in between because those are kind of wasted dollars more times than they're not. So you could try to spin it in that way. I know it is very pie in the sky. I'm just so sick of seeing teams like the Pirates. And at the bottom, you have Minnesota, who now has Minnesota's $35 million on their roster. 26 guys, $35 million.
Nine of the 26 guys just arrived. They just got exactly. rid of most of their team, and they were close, apparently, to getting rid of Joe Ryan and others.
Right. Miami's at $38 million, and they barely traded anybody. I mean, you have four teams that are under even 50.
The Yankees just got swept by a $38 million team?
Yeah, yeah.
Ouch, babe.
And it wasn't even particularly close, and they
that leaves a mark.
Jazz Chisholm, by the way, made a nice little base running mistake, forgot how many outs there were. Ah, don't you love happens. When good things happen to good people? Other way around.
I saw Boone was chewing out his first base coach. The wheels aren't falling off the Yankees at all, are they?
Oh, no. Yankees. I didn't see any Yankees fans on Twitter saying, okay, so who's our manager going to be in 2026? Like,
not Cora anymore. We're keeping him.
Exactly.
He's staying.
Like,
you had that dream.
Have a lifetime contract to begin with. Okay, so that is my stance on Major League Baseball. Stiz will be jumping in to occupy our third and final spot. Stiz, are you ready?
I'll give it a rip, Daniel.
All right, your 60 seconds begin right now.
All right, last night, the past weekend at MetLife Stadium was the two-night SummerSlam event for the WWE. And I only watch a few of these events a year, mostly the bigger ones, the Rumbles, the Manias, the SummerSlams. And it was a great event. Jelly Roll showed up. More importantly, Travis Scott did not. Cody Rhodes beat John Cena and is now the new WWE champion again. However, yesterday before night two, the WWE announced that they would stop doing the post-event press conferences, which I always thought were ridiculous. It was Triple H trying to get his Dana White on, and, you know, he'd be up there. They'd be asking the wrestlers, like, oh, man, did you have to dig deep to win? And it's like, it's make-believe. They knew what was going to happen. So I always thought it was a little ridiculous, so I'm happy they stopped these post-fight press conferences. But there may be a little more to the story, because last night, after Cody Rhodes defeated John Cena, Brock Lesnar showed up, and he hasn't been around in 2 years. And for you guys that don't know, Brock was named in that lawsuit with Vince. So people think that that might be the reason that they wanted to stop these post-fight press conferences, because they didn't want questions about Brock Lesnar. But however, I don't care. I'm just happy that they were over, because it was ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're stupid. I never really understood them, because they were trying to straddle the line between it's a real press conference,
yes,
and we're talking about real world, but then the storylines are woven in. And even the Brock Lesnar thing, there's multiple layers to that. Apparently they were planting seeds of misinformation with some of the blogs and various wrestling, Dave Meltzer newsletter, those places. So there's this whole thing where they've done it for years now. I think they call it kayfab or something. There's
kayfabe.
Kayfabe. But it's this, like, they love that question of what's real, what is, and are these press conferences real, are they not? I always thought they were stupid. I really do. Focus on, I think wrestling fans are kind of simple. They want, like, stars, storylines, feuds, whatever. They want surprise appearances. I just thought that, I'm with Stiz. I thought it missed the mark. I didn't think you needed that. I didn't think it added anything. And especially, who was attending them? Who was caring about them? It feels like this microscopic audience.
Well,
and
that was the funny thing. Like, real journalists were there, you know, and they would ask, like, these real sports questions, and to hear them try to answer. And, like, Andy, you know, you mentioned the fans. We all know it's fake.
Listening.
We all know that the winner is predetermined. It just, you know, I get what they were trying to do once they signed the deal with TKO. But yeah, I'm just happy they put an end to these press conferences.
Although it does sound like it was quite a show with Paul versus Jelly Roll.
Yeah.
And Jelly Roll's a cool, like, the Paul brothers look like athletes. They're athletes.
Yeah, they
are. So for them to go from social media to the ring probably isn't big. A fat country singer lost weight and is now wrestling on the second biggest event of the year, third biggest event of the year for WWE, a two-night event. I think that's pretty cool. And I know he's likable for his history stiz of, you know, drug abuse and prison. And,
yeah.
And
I've heard his, I haven't been to a concert of his, but I've heard there, it's very much a spiritual thing.
Yes.
Like, you're loved here, you're appreciated here, all that kind of stuff.
And if you want to, awesome. If you want to see something ridiculously impressive, he testified before Congress about drug use, opioids or something. I don't know what this, and it's one of the most impressive things I've ever seen.
Wow. I haven't seen that.
He's a really versatile talent guy.
You know, the other thing I heard about Jelly Roll, Andy, and the weight. Awaken 180.
Really? I like it. That's so, alleged. I don't know if we're allowed to allege that, but
so
that is alleged.
Five more yards on his drives or
absolutely.
Whatever that ad read was that was told.
Five more feet on his choke slam when he picked up Paul and just drove him. He didn't have the flexibility to do that prior.
Specific to the press conferences, I was with you guys, and I'm not a huge wrestling guy, so I'm looking at it more like comparing what you see in sports versus what kind of goes on in more the entertainment realm there. It kind of felt a little lazy, almost. Like, to your point, you want rivalries, you want guys on the mic, in the ring, you want things that are just being storylines that are furthered by the matches themselves
right.
and the commentary from the guys that's going on before and going after. So if you don't have engaging stories, you don't have engaging athletes, I guess you kind of have to use that as a crutch. Like, here's what I want you to hear.
I also think it was a part of the now defunct WWE Network, which was a standalone thing, and now it's kind of woven into Peacock, maybe?
Yeah.
Or wherever it is available.
Yeah.
I think it was content for their shows, their people, talk shows, posts. Now we can analyze. We obviously analyze Alex Cora's press conference. Well, if they have a post pay-per-view show on the WWE Network, they can analyze Hunter Henry's, Helmsley. What the hell's his name?
Triple H.
Hunter Hurst Helmsley.
I tried to go with the
full
name. Should have just stuck with the Triple H there.
Thank you.
And they could analyze that. There's less of those now, so they probably don't need it as much to kind of make it seem like a real sporting event.
They were going on McAfee and stuff. It was like kind of getting out of control.
And
it's weird.
I think Triple H was recently named, I don't know, director, I don't know how you call it, director of content, head of something
creative.
Else.
Oh, yeah.
So it kind of seemed like just at large, the WWE kind of lost its way a little bit. Like when Vince was tied up in all the legal stuff and wasn't really as involved in the product before they named him that, they kind of went through a bit of a weird transition. So it seems like they are getting back to the roots of what they have been that fans love so much.
Oh, we could compare it to the New England Patriots. Sometimes when you have a dictator like Vince McMahon, it's easy. Like, we all know the buck stops at him. Whatever he says goes, whether we like the idea or not.
But whatever.
Bill Belichick. And then all of a sudden they got collaborative down in Foxborough. How'd that go? Not
bad.
Well.
Bad. Poorly.
Didn't end well for Bill. Didn't end well for Gerard Mayo. Yeah. Now we have sort of a dictator again.
Right.
Mike Vrabel is a younger version of a dictator. So maybe Triple H is the new dictator and he's the be-all, end-all for WWE again. All right, that's going to do it for the three-point stance today, boys. That was a very diverse one. Economics, WNBA, WWE.
It's summer. Let's have some fun with it.
It is still summer, but it's a summer that's going well here at Fenway Park for the Boston Red Sox. We've been reacting to that all show. Great weekend. But up next, we need to touch on the Patriots. They had their season ticket holder practice Friday night at Gillette Stadium. There was some good, but I would say there was more bad. And that's not great for the offense. That's not great for the vibe. We'll talk about that next with our buddy Mike Giardi here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending.
Your home of the Sox. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, here's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Red Sox completed the series sweep over the Astros yesterday afternoon with a 6-1 win at Fenway Park. It's the first Red Sox series sweep against the Astros since April the 25th through the 28th of 2013. Boston is now 11 games over 500 for the first time in 3 years. They're in second place in the AL East, 3 games back of the Blue Jays, and a game and a half up on the Yankees. The Red Sox begin a 3-game series against the Royals tonight at Fenway. First pitch is at 7:10. Brian Baio will start for the Sox, and here is your lineup as Romy Gonzalez starts at second with Alex Bregman at third. Roman Anthony in right. Rob Refsnyder is your DH with Trevor Story at short. Zaidan Rafaela in center. Jaron Duran in left. Abraham Toro at first. And then Connor Wong is your catcher, and he is batting ninth. You can listen to the game on WEEI FM 93.7 and across the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's, go shopping, get rewarded. Mass Mutual pregame show with Christian Arcan begins at 6:10, and Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks have the call of the game. The Patriots completed day 10 of training camp earlier today. As announced by the team, the statue unveiling for Tom Brady on Friday is set for 6 p.m. The Patriots preseason game against the Commanders will kick off at 7:30. From around the league, the Dolphins and defensive tackle Zach Sealer agreed to a three-year extension that makes him the team's highest-paid defensive player. And the NFL Players Association has elected David White as its interim executive director 17 days after Lloyd Howell Jr. resigned. New Celtics minority owner Steve Pagliuca released a statement confirming an offer has been made to buy the WNBA's Connecticut Sun and move it out of Mohegan Sun Arena. He also said there were still approvals that had not been obtained from the league to this point. And Cameron Young became the 1,000th unique player to win a recognized PGA Tour event after winning the Wyndham Championship. I'm Dan Ball. This is Trending Now with WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoons live from Fenway Park coming up right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
What we do is not wrong with that rejoin. WEEI Afternoons at Fenway Park, but we are transitioning to a little football talk here with our favorite guest. We had to bump him on Friday as we all bitched about the Red Sox, but Mike Giardi was at Patriots season ticket holder practice on Friday. He's been there all weekend, so the best phone interview talking football in the business, Mike Giardi.
It's time for Mike Giardi.
Stink, stank, and stunk.
The bulging in his disc in his back. The bulging disc in his back.
What do you gain by keeping Bill Belichick around?
I want to see as much Drake May as possible.
Angry Giardi is here.
Wiggy appears to have a bit of a man crush on Cam.
I don't know if you want to take the cheese again.
Mike Giardi, folks, is an angry man.
I'm not pissed today.
I've got you by at least 2 inches.
On Boston Sports Original, WEEI.
Michael, how we doing?
I'm still recovering from being bumped. Still recovering, you know? it was a hurtful thing that you did there, and I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how this interview goes today.
We wanted you to get to practice earlier and be able to take in all the sights and sounds, and we really didn't need, like, another voice bitching about the Red Sox. So that's true.
And Andy's been big on making friends the last couple of days, so that's also where we're
at. I've noticed that.
All right. let's start with something a little serious before we get into just the football stuff. You know I've had my questions about Terrell Williams and his status, and from what I saw on Twitter today, he unfortunately may have passed out, was carted off. What do we know about Terrell Williams, his health, and his status from today?
They're saying it was dehydration and that he's fine. So we'll have to take them at their word on that. Obviously, he's had a tough 4 or 5 months here from a physical standpoint, not being able to be with the team during the spring sessions because of whatever the medical thing that popped up was that kept him in Detroit. And now this. So, I mean, it's certainly something that bears watching. I know the guys talk about him. They're thrilled to have him around. He brings a good energy, at least in the meeting rooms. It's hard to see on the field because he's not moving very much on the field. He doesn't move very well to begin with, and he's off to the side calling plays, but sort of almost removed from the group a little bit.
Mike, I don't ever want to be accused of leading the witness, so I'm going to ask you a very simple, open-ended question. How do you feel about the Patriots' offensive line right now?
So look, I'm not where you were, where you got yelled at last week by Tom Curran.
Yeah, wrong-headedness, he said. Wrong-headedness, that was bullying.
Yes, it was bullying, and I've been on that side of it too with him. But I will say that there are a lot of questions and concerns. I mean, you're getting excited about the idea of having, you know, what Jared Wilson has done is ascending into the starting lineup as a rookie at left guard. And then you realize you're playing him next to a rookie left tackle. Generally in the NFL, from a history perspective, teams don't do this by choice. Now, is this the hey, these guys are worth it, and you're going to look back on it and go, unbelievable, this is awesome, this couldn't have worked out any better? I mean, that's your hope. But in general, I don't think that that was the master plan to say, hey, let's put two rookies side by side and see what happens.
How about that rookie left tackle? Have you seen growth day over day? Where would you say he is at since the beginning of camp?
So I would say he's been better in team periods than he has been in the one-on-ones. But then, you know, I say better. So I think he's an above-average run blocker already. I think you see the skills, the athletic skills, the movement, his feet, his power, which, again, some people think he's a guard down the line, and maybe you're starting to see some of that stuff when it comes to blocking. When it comes to pass blocking, it's a mixed bag. You know, he got beat today by Keon White down in the red zone in 11-on-11, and then other times held his own. I think generally when you look at the history of the league, guys don't really step in at left tackle and be awesome right away. I mean, there are obviously examples of them, of guys doing that, but in general, it's a position that you have to grow, and I think he's going to be, obviously, never mind the physical things that we've talked about from way back in, you know, January and February, but there's other parts of the game that he's going to be challenged as well, and we'll see how he responds to that.
A lot of people wrote about and talked about the interceptions from Drake May on Friday night in the practice because he had previously not thrown any. That is not what jumped out to me in terms of turnovers. It was a fumble. It was Ramondre Stevenson, and I'm wondering, is that a guy that should be worried about his roster spot? If he's picking up where he left off a year ago, putting the ball on the ground, isn't that bad for job security?
So it's definitely not good for job security, and he talked about it today with us and said essentially, like, I know that, you know, like, that this can't happen, and that, you know, hopefully I'm getting the mistake out of my system now and that I have a clean slate when it comes to the regular season. But he has, the last 2 years, has not been their best back. I mean, it was Antonio Gibson last year, pretty much for the entirety of the second half of the year, was the better running back. And people kind of forget the year before, Ezekiel Elliott was actually the better running back, you know, especially in the second half of the year as well. So to me, I think there's a lot of talent there. I love the way he runs, the physical nature in which he runs. But if he's not going to be able to hang on to the football, you drafted Trevion Henderson in the second round, and Gibson has proved that, like, he can handle a decent workload. So, yeah, I would say, you know, there's a little bit of pressure on him to make sure that that goes away. That said, Andy, I'm still in favor of keeping all three. Like, I just think injuries happen at that position. So,
yep.
You know, I know they could save some money or whatever, but, like, who cares? Like, he's still one of your best 53. Figure it out.
Just to clarify, too, Andy, when you asked the class to name surprise cuts a couple weeks ago, who was your pick?
I believe it was Ramondre Stevenson,
okay,
and I believe the picture I painted was, let's just say he puts the ball on the ground in, say, joint practices or preseason game. I didn't know he would do it in just a scrimmage soon, but yeah, I think that's something to keep an eye on.
Just making sure that you were validating your pick there with that question.
Genius walks alone.
Absolutely, as it always does.
Oh, boy.
To stick on the offense, also coming out of the scrimmage on Friday, the apparent injury to Kendrick Bourne. I know Mike Vrabel saying that we're probably not going to see him much this week. How much does his potential just lack of availability complicate an already pretty complicated wide receiver decision?
So I was thinking that at this point, prior to the injury on Friday, that he was probably the on the outside looking in, and it's not because of anything that he's done or hasn't done. I just think, you know what he is. And then when you start to go look at the numbers, I mean, I think you have four locks, right? Diggs, Douglas, Hollins, and Kyle Williams. I think those guys are put them down on the book. I think Kayshon Boutte has proven that he belongs on the team again. Maybe, but more likely you keep six and try to slide an Efton Chisholm or even a Javon Baker, who had a pretty nice day today, to the practice squad. And we all get all nervous about, oh, they'll never make it through waivers. Like, 95% of the guys make it through waivers. It doesn't happen very often where someone gets claimed off waivers. And you'd be talking about someone in Baker who had one catch last year, was a fourth-round pick, and had been taken off, you know, people's boards because of character concerns. And, you know, Chisholm wasn't on too many people's radar, certainly didn't get drafted. So then I just kind of look at Bourne and think, like, could I see Kendrick Bourne being traded back to San Francisco for a late-round pick as they go through some wide receiver stuff there? Yeah, I could totally see that.
Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal, joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. I wasn't there, Mike. We were here at Fenway Park watching a great baseball game, and I know there was some unique scoring system where Stretch was giving out points for various things, but the quarterback of the New England Patriots, one of the things that I hear about him all offseason, sooner or later he's got to start winning games. He couldn't win games last year. How did he lose a scrimmage to Dobbs? Like, is that a bad sign? Is that a bad way to start the year? The first time they did anything closely competitive, he lost.
I would just be more concerned about just the overall level at which he performed. And, you know, they were mixing and matching. So, you know, he had the left side of the offensive line, but the right side was on the other team. And, you know, the different pieces being played at wide receiver with him. But, like, there was one series where he had three throwaways. And, you know, we don't have the luxury of looking back at the practice tape. We don't get that. You're only looking at it live. And you're like, well, could he have, was there somebody open? He didn't see him. You know, I guess you take the throwing it away and say, well, at least he didn't throw an interception. Well, he did that twice anyways. One was, a slightly errant pass. By the way, I apologize for the lawn service next to my house here making all kinds of noise. one was an errant pass, kind of threw it behind Stephon Diggs. Kobe Minor was able to get his hands on it and then was picked off by Robert Spillane. And then sort of the miscommunication with Kyle Williams on the outside to basically end the practice on what would have been a pick six, but Austin wisely slid down at the 2-yard line because, you know, they were sort of playing into the game and you would have been able to run out the clock there. So, Vrabel talked about that today and said, hey, if the cornerback is flat-footed, it's a yes or no. You're either not throwing it or you're telling, you know, you're looking at Kyle and Kyle's got to go by him. And they didn't have that sort of communication there, and you hope they can learn from it. But I just, it was a little rough to see, a little shaky at times. You could see some hesitation in this game. And I don't think there's been a ton of that this camp. But when it does show up, then his footwork gets a little wonky sometimes and the release gets a little wonky sometimes. It's like that's the moment when some of the things that we talked about a lot last year going into the year kind of pop up for him.
Kind of off of that, in your opinion, because you've seen good quarterbacks, you've seen Mac Jones, like you've kind of seen the gamut in terms of quarterbacks with the Patriots. Is Drake being challenged enough? Are they asking enough of Drake where you think he is getting better day after day in this camp?
I do think they're challenging him. I do think I think it's been a good camp, not a great camp. I mean, some people will tell you it's like an A-plus camp. I'm probably more in the B-minus camp, but when you consider learning a new offense for the fourth time in 4 years, you know, learning a whole different language here, assimilating new pieces into the offense in terms of the receiver position, like, I've been pretty pleased with it, and I think they are too. I think one of the things that's interesting is if you guys, you know, I don't love the Forged in Foxborough and all these things that they release, but every time they release a clip where Vrabel's talking to May, Vrabel's always telling May, like, go talk to your guys, like, go over there. So he's like, there's like a continued pushing him in terms of being a leader and sort of interacting with his teammates. So you start to wonder, is that something that just doesn't necessarily come naturally to him? And does he just want to lead by example and play? And, you know, clearly that position requires more. So I think that's something to keep kind of watching as we go forward.
Something that might help Drake May's leadership is, I don't know, number one wide receiver named Terry McLaurin, who could be coming to town with the Washington Commanders. Any chance that he stays in town? Give me the breakdown on what are the chances that Terry McLaurin could get traded to the Patriots.
I put it at 0.0.
You suck.
I don't see how. I don't see how in the hell. Like, I get it. They're at odds here. He wants what DK Metcalf got. They look at the Cortland Sutton deal, which, by the way, McLaurin's people had to hate last week, and say, no, you guys are the same age. Like, that's more of the reasonable 4-92 versus 5-150 and 60-something guaranteed. But I think at the end of the day, this is all posturing, and that Washington will look at their situation and say, we have a really good quarterback on a rookie contract, and yes, this might hurt us 3 years down the line. We might have dead money for Terry McLaurin, or Terry McLaurin becomes a 30-catch guy in 2028. But for 2025 and 26, like, you got to have him on the roster. So I just don't – it's like the Parsons thing. I just don't see how it ends up happening. I just – there's too much value there for the player with the team. They'll figure it out.
Oh, okay. So I was going to represent the Ted Johnson delegate for defensive excellence. Would you also you'd also put Micah Parsons at 0.0?
So I look, Parsons is awesome, but you're talking about, look at the Khalil Mack deal from, was that 18 or 19? 2 ones, a 3, and a 6. I think they got a future second back, but like, that's real, real draft capital. Then you got to turn around and give him 4 and 160, 4 and 170, and most of that's going to be guaranteed. Like, Yeah, he's awesome. I just, that's a lot to give up. And then to pay him basically like he's a quarterback. I just don't think it makes a lot of sense for where this team is right now. You know, you could actually make the argument that McLaurin would be the more valuable piece for where they are in their build than Parsons is. I think your defense should be pretty good. They don't have a Micah Parsons, I get, but like when you start talking about the assets you have to give up, it's almost like I'll take my chances in the draft that I can find a guy like that, and you know, in the mid first round, just like the Cowboys did.
Before we let you go, we crowdsourced this one from the Twitch chat. What's the weakest link on this football team in your eyes after whatever it is, 2 weeks of training camp?
It's still the offensive line. I don't know.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
No, I know. I just don't know. Well, I'm not going to compare it to DeMontre Jacobs and Vidarian Lowe. Although,
no, it's three rookies starting. You want three rookies starting? A left tackle who should be a guard who should be a center, and a right tackle who shouldn't be playing? That sounds better to me. Talk about it.
Hmm. So I don't know where you get your third. Where do you get your third? Wait, where do you get your third rookie? You start.
I was reading all you guys, Marcus Bryant, who I never even heard of until last week.
Yeah.
Is getting reps out there.
Well, here's what they're doing. Right, but here's what they're doing right now. They're trying to figure out who can be the swing tackle. If it's, you know, Vidarian Lowe came back today, so it was his first day back. He's probably the odds-on favorite to be your swing tackle because he has played some right and obviously played last year as your starting left tackle. Mm. But, like, I think they're just looking at him, Jack Conley, the undrafted free agent out of BC, Bryant, and even Jacobs, and saying, exactly. But you're saying, can one of you guys do both? Because if you can, then you probably carve yourself a spot on the roster. If you can't, then you're probably practice squad or, you know, see you later.
Okay, well, you did agree that the weakest link on the team is the offensive line. Nice hit, Mike Giardi. Even though you didn't agree with me on everything, we'll still have you back in the future. Thanks for joining us. That's Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal. We'll talk to you next week, Mike.
See you, boys.
See ya. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we need to react to a couple things he said. And he was a bit of a wet blanket, I'm not going to lie. There was a little negativity. And
not everybody's as optimistic as you.
Well, I did note that, you know, he was acknowledging, some people are telling you it's an A, I'm kind of a B minus or a C. And there was a B minus C tone to a lot of his answers.
Yes.
So we'll touch on some of that tone from Mike Giardi next here on WEEI Afternoons.
WEEI, New England Sports Original.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Something that might help Drake May's leadership is, I don't know, number one wide receiver named Terry McLaurin, who could be coming to town with the Washington Commanders. Any chance that he stays in town? Give me the breakdown on what are the chances that Terry McLaurin could get traded to the Patriots.
I put it at 0.0.
You suck.
See, that's what you should be booing.
That's a boo, wet blanket.
Exactly.
Now, the one problem is...
Right.
And I agree with him. Because... You're talking about one of the dumbest possible trades that could be made right now in the National Football League. WEEI Afternoons here at Fenway Park. That was Mike Giardi joining us. They just go in Washington to an NFC title game with Jaden Daniels. He's the talk of the town. He's the next big thing, the number two pick, the great leader whose mom is always with him. Side story.
Okay.
I don't know if I think that's the coolest thing ever or a little bit weird.
Okay.
I haven't really finalized.
Yeah, let me know when you figure out if that's concerning or not.
And whether I'm going to offend, you know, every mother on the planet right now, if I really express an opinion. But are they that dumb that you finally get over the hump? You're no longer the laughingstock franchise. You're no longer sexual harassment and Daniel Snyder and that whole era. And you're going to trade away your best player?
Yeah.
Like, Adam Peters has done a nice job, the GM there.
Very much so, in a very short amount of time.
Yes, and in different ways. You know, Ted was in love with his quantity free agent class last year, whereas this year it became a little bit more quality, bigger names. Oh, we'll get Laremy Tunsil. We'll get Deebo Samuel.
Yeah, solve specific issues instead of we just need guys.
Right. You just need guys. Guys got you to playoffs. Guys got you to double-digit wins. Guys got you on the doorstep of a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Now we add the right guys to put us over the top.
Kind of Patriots-esque.
A little bit.
You kind of had, especially on the defensive end, a quantity free agency class.
And then you're going to take away your number one wide receiver who has been good with every quarterback, has like paid his dues, sort of the face of the franchise through the good and the bad of recent years.
Bridges the gap of the fan base, so to speak.
To me, this is up there. It's different because it's different sports and he's not young, but it's up there with like Luka shocking dumb. Like you're just totally derailing the franchise. What are you doing down there kind of thing? That's why I just can't envision it. So for me, it's not as much about Ted pushing back on, well, you're going to give them 2 second-round picks and $130 million? Yeah, I would, in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I just don't think they're dumb enough to take it. And I'm not going to give them a Herschel Walker. I'm not giving them a 1, 2 twos, a 3, a receiver, like this some crazy package.
Right, because the reality of what he is still true. He's a 30-year-old receiver who could start going down the other side of the career mountain at any point.
Indeed.
And he needs a contract, and you've shown the unwillingness to pay it so far, which is the most surprising part to me. I mean, this new ownership group has seen like they are more than willing to spend and acquire and move what it takes in order to, you know, keep the proper talent and build a competitive football team. I am pretty surprised that they haven't found a solution to this yet. I know that holding out isn't new or, this crazy concept within the NFL, but Josh Schneider, I think is the guy's name, is the owner.
And Harris.
Josh Harris. Adam Peters have shown more than their willingness to like, let's spend and do this thing right. Let's spend on the talent that we have in order to make our team competitive.
And Giardi's right. It's posturing. It's NFL. It's that seat.
Sure.
That's why we have Micah Parsons in Dallas. That's why a year ago, I don't even know if it was the exact same time, but we were talking about what's-his-name in San Francisco, their second receiver out there. Oh, he'd trade to New England.
Brandon Ayuk. Yeah.
And what happened to him?
He's signed for long while.
Right, a lot of these are talking, I do this, you do that. Oh, I'll show up, I won't show up. I'll show up and then I'll leave and I'll bitch an official trade request. And then we'll all come together. Ty Law did it years ago.
Yeah.
When he called Bill Belichick a liar. And then he was like, what's up, Bill? Thanks for paying me. Like, you pay a little bit of money and it fixes it all. Yeah. They're just figuring out when the time is right. I'd like to play into it. Like, obviously, for talk radio purposes, the biggest topic of this week could be, other than the Red Sox, who are great, and we're going to continue to talk about them, Terry McLaurin's coming to town. Why can't he just switch sides of the field on Friday night? He's going to be in a Washington jersey. He can come pay. It's a little Joe Ryan-esque. Oh, you're going to be in Minnesota. Why don't you just bring Joe Ryan back with you on the trade deadline? But that was more realistic than this. Way more realistic.
Absolutely, yeah.
This is, to me, a pipe dream. I think they're both pipe dreams. Micah Parsons isn't going anywhere. Because if anybody has proven the posturing and what, it's the Cowboys.
Just to overpay at the end.
Somebody's always pissy. And then that person always gets a ridiculous amount of money at the, you know, becomes the highest paid at their position.
Yep.
And
did it with the other two of the big three in Dallas. Did it with Dak and did it with CeeDee Lamb.
But even over the years, I feel like Zeke was one of those guys. Like they have all these guys that holdouts. Tyron Smith was one of them. Their left tackle. They just have because they've drafted pretty well. They've developed some stars and then they have these stars that want a boatload of money. The big thing for Terry McLaurin is the age and the comp and who I am. Am I comparing to a 26-year-old receiver or a 28-year-old receiver or, God forbid, the actual age that I am receiver and and how that all plays out. We are here at the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and the Ford Summer Sales Event. Hurry in to get great deals now, including on F-Series, official truck of the Red Sox. Coming up here on WEEI Afternoons, we talk a little bit more Patriots. We are a couple weeks in, but we talk about the quarterback, who's having, according to Mike Giardi, a B-minus training camp through a couple picks. In the in the practice Friday night at the stadium, had a questionable day today, according to Jones and Keefe.
Yikes.
Who would you rather have? Drake May?
Or Joe Milton?
Nope. Or the former number one overall pick, Caleb Williams. The honeymoon might be over in Chicago for arguably the most talented quarterback of last year's draft class. Caleb Williams for the long haul or Drake May? Who's better? 617-779-7937, WEEI Afternoons.
Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson on WEEI.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.